21. The time is 1:33 p.m. We're meeting in State Capitol Room number 205. Full house. Everyone in attendance today is Senator Schauer, Senator Keel, Senator Hughes, Senator Myers, and myself, Chair Senator Holland. We do have a quorum to conduct business. And please silence any cell phones anybody might have in here. Thank you to Nancy, our recording secretary, and Marissa, our moderator for the day. All right, we will first turn our attention to two pieces of legislation, Senate Joint Resolution 6 regarding a constitutional amendment concerning the permanent fund and the permanent fund dividend, and Senate Bill 53 regarding the permanent fund and an advisory note for the permanent fund. And I believe first up will be Brandon Brzezinski, Special Assistant to the Policy Advisor from the Governor's Office, who will give opening remarks. And I believe you're prepared to talk about SJR 6?
No, sir. We have Deputy Commissioner Mike Barnhill should be online for
that. You're going to do 53? Or just going to do opening remarks?
Do both. I'm going to provide opening remarks, and then I have to leave for another appointment.
Sounds excellent.
Just a few minutes, so.
Well, please state your name, put yourself on the record, and begin your presentation.
Yes, sir. For the record, Brandon Brzezinski, Office of the Governor. Through the chair, good afternoon, members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Thank you for hearing SJR 6 and SB 53, which are the governor's proposed constitutional permanent fund amendment and the statutory 50-50 PFD formula legislation. Prior to the Department of Revenue giving the presentation, the governor asked that I give a few remarks on his behalf as to why, he believes that these two pieces of legislation are the top priority facing the state and its citizens. And that is how Alaska must secure its fiscal future. And the first step to achieving this goal is to constitutionally protect the permanent fund and the PFD. So after years of spending down the CBR and the SBR, we're now facing a situation where the earnings reserve is exposed to a simple majority vote. It could experience a similar fate, but that comes at the consequence of jeopardizing the permanent fund and the potential elimination of the PFD for future generations of the state. This is not lost on the governor. Like, he understands this and senses the urgency of the fiscal crisis. So that's why the governor's proposed this legislation, to establish a framework, or as some say, a rules-based system around how we treat the permanent fund, how we manage the permanent fund, and implement the necessary protections to prevent ad hoc spending, and also to allow for continued growth in the fund going into the future. But in addition to protecting the permanent fund, this proposal is also going to protect the PFD and restore the confidence and the trust with the people of the state that they will receive their annual share of Alaska's resource wealth. The governor also strongly believes, firmly believes, that we cannot do this on our own as government, that we must include the people of the state every step of the way. So because of this, actually backing up a bit, why the governor believes that? Because it was through the people of the state that created the permanent fund. So as we amend our permanent fund and decide how to treat the permanent fund, we must involve them through this process. So in closing, the governor's legislative proposals taken together, both of these pieces of legislation must be read together in order to make sense. What they will do is they will, one, protect the permanent fund for the state and for the people. They're going to provide an opportunity for continued growth and for the future benefit of Alaska's. And they're also going to involve Alaskans in what is probably the most critical, crucial decision that we're facing today as a state since creating the permanent fund decades ago. So with that, we have Deputy Commissioner Mike Barnhill's online, and we have OMB in the room here if there's any questions. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Special Assistant Brzezinski. We may have a question from Senator Schauer.
I just have a brief one, and it's more for the record because we've gone through this bill over the last couple of years, these versions of them several times. We've seen them in previous committees, state affairs. But could you explain for the public so people understand why there is a constitutional amendment with a bill that is associated with it so people understand what's taking place, please?
Yes, sir. Through the chair, Senator Schauer, the constitutional amendment, it proposes two provisions that, one, it will propose a annual draw from the permanent fund through a percent of market value, POMV, and the statute, or the percentage of that draw will be defined in statute. And then two, it will propose that from that draw, as decided by law, there will be a PFD that comes out of the annual POMV. So, and what that means and why we have the statutory bill is because we're also proposing a recalculation of the PFD formula. Currently, it is calculated off of the statutory net income over the last 5 years. So the governor's SB 53 proposes to change it to 50% of the annual POMB draw. So the statutory bill provides the formula, which then is referenced in the constitutional amendment that PFD will be paid as provided by law.
One follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to add to that for the public's notification and as we debate it, one of the concerns amongst many legislators in the building and others, even in the administration, has been enshrining the formula into the Constitution and what that might do and where that might put us, not binding future legislatures, et cetera, with the power of the purse. So I just wanted to add to that explanation, and thank you for that, is that that's part of this assuaging that concern that you would have a formula in the Constitution, only that in essence there would be a PFD paid, and you have the ability to work on the formula in statute. And just so that we can discuss that, I think it's important we get that on the record.
Yes, Mr. Chair, follow-up to that?
Certainly.
And as while the PFD formula will be provided in statute, if there's future changes to the formula, this resolution would require that any change of the formula by the legislature would have to go out for a vote of the people to, like, ratify that amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that was on the record because there's often confusion why there's multiple parts of this, and I just want people to know.
All right. Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I ask my question, can I ask Brendan how he pronounces his last name? Because I've never known how to pronounce it. Can you say it again?
Brefschinski.
Brefschinski. Okay. Yeah. I might need help with that later.
That works.
I am wondering if you could agree with this, if the governor would agree with this, and the reason that the 50-50 was picked was not only because of the 50-50 principle that Hammond began, but also, interestingly, it falls halfway between the tug-of-war that's been going on because when the governor initially came in with the statutory formula and was applying it to the POMV, what you had was he was suggesting in the different years something between the range of 70% to 80% of that draw be for the people's PFD and the remaining 20% to 30% being for the government. Whereas there were some legislators who were proposing, no, we'd like to switch that. We'd like 70% to 80% for the government, 20% to 30% for the people. And the 50-50 falls in the middle. So I guess, is his proposal of that 50-50, is it both based on the Hammond principle and the fact that it is the halfway point in the tug of war that's been underway?
So through the chair, Senator Hughes, I think it's both. Yes, it's the Alaskans should receive their 50% of the state's resource wealth. You know, the resources are commonly owned by the state of which is the people of Alaska. And then, yes, there's been that disconnect between the PFD formula as currently existing in law and how we draw from our permanent fund through the POMV. And I hope that it's not lost on the committee, you know, knowing how the governor's, you know, the positions he's taken in the past on the dividend, like we have come, or the governor has decided to come halfway with 50-50, which is, it's easy to understand, it's easy to explain to the constituents. It's a one-for-one proposal. So government gets a dollar, the people get a dollar. It's fair.
And as follow-up?
Follow-up from Senator Hughes.
So since his goalpost prior was 70% to 80% of the draw, is he proposing a midway point between those two extremes, or is he moving the goalpost so he wants to negotiate between 50-50 and something like 20-80?
Like 20 being, or through the chair?
20 for people, 80 for government.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, the governor believes 50-50 is the appropriate allocation of the permanent fund.
And as a follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up, Senator Hughes.
So he is not moving the goalpost. He is offering an olive branch, and he's saying he believes in the statutory, but he's willing to come to that midpoint. Is that what I'm hearing?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, yes, and 50% for the people, 50% for the government, while bringing the people along with government and, you know, policymakers as we move through this process. by means of a vote.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I have one very briefly. Questions or comments?
Brief at ease. The record. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a not a question, just a comment. Mr. Brzezinski mentioned 50% of the resources for the people, 50% of the resources for the government, and I just wanted to state I don't believe that's accurate, because what we're talking about is 50% of earnings off of investments. We've already diverted 75% or more, depending on how much you want to count, of our resources directly to the government in terms of the straight royalties, and only saved the 25% going into the permanent fund. So we've already diverted a significantly higher portion than 50%. And I just want to clear that up on the record.
Through the chair, Senator Myers, pardon my lack of specificity. You know, yes, the royalty, it is not 50% of like the pure royalty wealth, but it's also the investment earnings from that, those royalties as well. And then through a formula, you get 50% of the annual statutory net income, which comes off of the royalties and the investment earnings, and that provides for the dividend. Since people of Alaska are not allowed to own the subsurface rights, you know, this is a compromise. You could look at it that way. And much like any other private landowner in the lower 48 that would receive a royalty from any resource development on their property, you know, if they chose to save a portion of that royalty, hopefully they would earn investment earnings, and then they could pay them an ongoing dividend. So, yes.
Thank you. And then maybe a second set of questions from Senator Schauer.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. I'll speak louder. Sorry. Two, and I'm just going to say Brandon. I'm not going to try. So I concur with Senator Myers' comments there. That's something that's not lost. I think and a lot of people make this argument, oh, it's 50-50. It's not. So good discussion. That needs to be highlighted for those that try to represent it otherwise. But two things, and I'll defer to you, Brandon, or perhaps Mr. Barnhill if he wants to answer, but I want to make sure they're out there in case you wanted to answer this versus him. There are some differences with SGR1. There's another proposal that's out there from Senator Wilikowski. So if one of you would be willing to just maybe discuss a little bit of the difference in thought process, I think would be helpful for the debate. And the second one is just not lost somewhere in this discussion on inflation proofing and how we do that, because something we're all concerned with is the continued protection of and growth of the fund and how we accomplish that this way as opposed to just the split. So however that works out, Mr. Chairman, with whichever one is fine, I just wanted to get them out there. Thank you.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Schauer, I'll let Deputy Commissioner Barnhill speak to SGR1. However, as far as inflation proofing goes, SGR6 would constitutionally protect the permanent fund, and there would be no longer a need to do the annual inflation proofing from the earnings reserve back into the principal of the fund. And then we also protect it from inflation by having a draw set. Right now in statute, it's 5%. And the goal would be that the fund earns more, like let's say we have it in our presentation, you'll see an example where it's if the fund earns 7% and then there's a 5% draw, there's 2% left, that's the real growth in the fund that would capture the inflation. Also that 5% is based on a 5-year lagged average, so like the effective draw rate also comes into play, and with the fund being at I think like $78 billion right now, we're basing that off of 5-year average, going back 6, forward 5, 5-year average of the fund balances. So it's a much smaller number than $78 billion where we do the 5% calculation.
Thank you. Senator Q.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. while we're making corrections on the record, of course, we're really not talking about 50-50 for the people and the government, because as Mr. Brzezinski said when he quite correctly paraphrased the preamble to our Constitution, the state is the people of Alaska. And it's the people's roads and bridges and troopers and prisons. It's the people's courts and people's educational system and schools, people's clean air and clean drinking water, and people's biologists and fish managers and everything else. So I have some questions about the bill. I think maybe when the presentation gets to those points. Thank you.
Senator Keel. Thank you, Mr. Brzezinski. Close?
No, that's good.
And I believe we will move to Deputy Commissioner Mike Barnhill for the next portion of this. He's from the Department of Revenue. and we can turn that over to him. I believe you may have an obligation that's going to...
Yes, sir. And do we have a brief at ease, sir?
Brief at ease. Good afternoon. We're in the Senate Judiciary Committee. We're back on the record. Thank you for your patience. Technical problems resolved. I believe we're ready to move on to Deputy Commissioner Mike Barnhill. Commissioner Barnhill, can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me, sir?
And we hear you perfectly.
Excellent.
So if you would like to state your name, your affiliation, put yourself on the record, and begin your presentation. Looks like we might be looking at slide two.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Mike Barnhill, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Revenue. And Mr. Chair, I'd like to thank you and the committee for hearing these two measures from Governor Dunleavy. It's just a handful of slides. The proposals are relatively straightforward. I know the committee has a lot of questions. I plan on stopping at the end of each slide to take up your questions. And also I wanted to provide assurance to Senator Schauer that I'm more than happy to compare the current version of SJR1 to what the governor's proposing. So let's start on slide two, which outlines the objectives of SJR6. The first is to protect the permanent fund to ensure that it lasts forever. And the way it does that, Mr. Chair, is it brings the permanent fund structure, in as it's outlined in the Constitution, into alignment with the modern approach to managing institutional funds, including endowments. And as the third bullet point on the slide suggests, that's by adopting a one-account structure for the permanent fund. Right now, what we have is a structure that was placed in the Constitution in 1976, as the committee knows, And the drafters of that borrowed heavily from historic trust law and trust structures, which commonly used a two-account structure, which included a principal account and an income account. And historically, the mantra was save the principal, spend the income. Over the past number of decades, investment advisors, investment consultants, investment managers have recommended that endowments update their structures to a one-account structure from which a specific percentage can be spent each year. And when you devise that percentage such that it automatically inflation proofs that institutional fund or endowment, that is what ensures that it lasts forever. But not only lasts forever, but its inflation adjusted value lasts forever, and it's protected against being eroded by inflation. The second point objective is to constitutionally protect the PFD. And in this measure from as proposed by the governor, it requires that a percentage of the distribution from the permanent fund would be allocated or dedicated to the permanent fund dividend every year. One of the reasons that the administration and other stakeholders, including the trustees of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, are suggesting that we update the structure in the Constitution is concern about exhausting or depleting prematurely the earnings reserve account. Since the enactment of SB 26 in 2018, we've been using the permanent fund for two purposes: to pay the permanent fund dividend, as well as to provide funds for government spending. And so the spending demands on the permanent fund have increased. The percentage amount that we're pulling out of the permanent fund is increasing. And there can be scenarios, if it's such as a combination of taking 5% out of the permanent fund each year in combination with downturns in the investment market. If those happen over a series of years, we could encounter a situation where the earnings reserve account is depleted. And the trustees, as well the trustees of the Permanent Fund Corporation, as well as the administration, are proposing to avoid that by going to a one-account endowment structure where that can never happen. And then finally, as an objective, this measure proposes that whenever there is a statutory change to the allocation for permanent fund dividends, that the people of Alaska be engaged. And this measure provides for an advisory vote every time the legislature adjusts that percentage for the permanent fund dividend. So I'll pause there at the end of page two to see if there are any questions about objectives. And then the next slide goes into the actual mechanics of how it proposes to accomplish these objectives.
Are there any questions from the committee? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess a question for Mr. Barnhill. When you talk about the amendment protecting against the real value of the fund ever being eroded, I'm missing the provision. I mean, the way this is written, the legislature could draw 10% in a year with 21 and 11 and a governor's signature, right?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, that's a great question. And I do have a slide that discusses the real versus the nominal value of returns, but I'm happy to get into it now. And just for to back up for the committee's benefit, the real value of a fund is its inflation-adjusted value. So we take out inflation when we look at returns, and the purpose of that is so that the purchasing power of the fund will be the same through time, or will be no less through time. This, what Governor Dunleavy has proposed here is to allow the legislature through statute to specify the distribution percentage. As the committee knows, in 2018, the legislature enacted SB 26, which specified for the first couple years a 5.25% distribution rate multiplied by what I call a five-year lagging average of the market value of the permanent fund. Mr. Bashinsky just described what that is. Five-year lagging average is the first five, average of the first five of the last six fiscal years. And then in SB 26, that distribution rate ratcheted down to 5%. There has been discussion over the past couple of years whether 5% is the right number. And that discussion will never end. In order to keep the fund protected from inflation, we need to always evaluate the spending from the fund in relation to the real return of the fund. And that's just going to change over time as a necessity because capital markets change, inflation changes, and spending levels change. And so we have a bit of a dilemma, if you will, Mr. Chair and Senator Keel. We could hardwire a number such as 5% into the Constitution, but as capital markets change, that number could become either too high or too low. And so in lieu of hardwiring a number, and this is the first difference between SJR1 and SJR6, SJR1 proposes to put 5% distribution multiplied by the five-year market lagging market average, put that 5% number in the Constitution. Governor Dunleavy is proposing something different, and that is to put no number in the Constitution, but have the legislature specify that number. And that gives the legislature the flexibility to pick a distribution rate that is consistent with protecting the real value of the fund over time. Now, Senator Keel, to your specific question, can the legislature enact a 10% distribution rate? And my argument would be that the Constitution sets out that it must be a permanent fund, and by permanent meaning that the real value of the fund will be permanently maintained. And so enactment of a distribution rate that is at odds with that constitutional purpose, I don't think would be valid. Now, there may be a situation, let's all knock on wood and hope that maybe it comes true, that the markets are so we have such high returns that a 10% distribution rate is consistent with the real return of the fund. Mr. Chair, that has happened over brief periods in the last 50 years, but it's not likely to be sustainable. And I believe that the legislature is going to focus, not only because of the spirit of the Constitution, but any distribution rate that risks eroding the permanent real value of the fund over time would likely be found invalid. Now, let me just make one further comment, and that is the governor's proposing an approach that allows for this flexibility and for these discussions to continue indefinitely, because that's really how endowment funds are managed. However, if the legislature believes that it needs to hardwire some number in there, the governor, again, is willing to let the legislature make that call. And there are a variety of ways of doing that, and the legislature may want to consider the approach that was taken in the public school trust legislation in 2018, HB 213, which converted the public school trust from a historic principal and income to account structure to an endowment with a 5% distribution rate, but they inserted the words not more than 5%, which gave some wiggle room to distribute less if the staff and consultants advise that there's a risk of overdraw. That approach has been implemented into HGR1, which is pending on the House side.
Thank you for that answer. Is there any more questions there? Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Barnhill, along those lines, rather than hardwiring a number into the Constitution or alternately hardwiring a number into statute, why don't we simply put in the Constitution that we use the average realized rate of return?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, that's actually an idea worth considering. It adds complexity to the language, but that, you know, functionally is the goal of, you know, modern institutional fund management, is to try and match the real return to the spending rate. The one difficulty which I would offer for the committee's consideration is that real rates of return can be volatile. Markets can go up substantially, like, you know, right now, markets are up substantially. Markets can go down substantially. And, you know, we try to smooth that in our distribution formula by having a five-year lagging market average that you multiply the percentage against. That's one way of smoothing volatility. The danger of just matching the real return is there may be times when it goes high and, you know, we get into difficulties by taking too much out and setting our budget to a higher level and then having to ratchet down. So that's a difficulty. So having a percentage set in statute gives you gives the permanent fund and the appropriating bodies the ability to have some, I don't want to say certainty, but consistency, I think, is the word I'm looking for, year over year, so that the number is that's being spit out by the formula is relatively the same. As the committee knows, under the SB 26 formula, we've been distributing from the permanent fund about $3 billion a year, and, you know, that the smoothing formula, the five-year average, helps create some consistency.
Thank you. I'll just remind the committee we should probably consider this is just the first slide of four or five slides on SDR 6, and there's probably 10 slides on 53. Are there any questions from the committee? Senator Hughes.
Yes, and having served on another committee with this chair, he runs things very orderly, so just be aware. So while we have leadership from Department of Revenue and we're talking about this percentage rate, I'd just like to ask you, Mr. Barnhill, whether there is universal or at least general agreement among financial experts that a 5% POMV does allow over time inflation proofing, or because I've heard some folks pushing for a lower amount, but is there general agreement under the financial experts throughout the globe that 5% is safe over time?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, if I could ask Ms. Schultz to just advance the slides to page 4 so we can talk about distribution rates. So just to make sure that everyone understands, when we talk about returns from the permanent fund, we're usually talking about nominal returns. In order to compute the real return, we have to subtract inflation. And the idea is, in order to inflation-proof under a percent of market value model or institutional or endowment fund model, we want the fund to retain the earnings that is in the amount of the inflation for that year or that period. Over the past, well, let me back up. So the global capital markets have been in a bull market meaning returns going up since 2009. Some hiccups along the way, but 2009 to March of 2020 was a very long-running bull market. Investment consultants were concerned about whether that bull market was sustainable past 2020. And then suddenly we had a global pandemic with a fairly sharp market correction with an almost automatic rebound. And we've continued either the previous bull market or perhaps some think we've started a new business cycle in bull market. I would say, Senator Hughes, that there isn't consensus ever amongst investment consultants and investment advisors and market experts about what the future holds. I would say that the majority of investment consultants with whom the state of Alaska deals, either through the retirement system or the permanent fund, are concerned that over the next 10 years, hitting a 5% rate of real return rate is going to be challenging. And I think the fact that, you know, right now the year-to-date investment return is north of 20% for both the retirement systems and the permanent fund. There's some concern that what we're doing, the capital markets are pulling returns forward, and that we'll pay a price for that at some point over the next 3 to 5 years. No one knows. I mean, bottom line, no one has a crystal ball. And, you know, what I would recommend, what the Department of Revenue would recommend, is that we always keep an eye on what is the real rate of return, 1, 3, 5-year, 10-year real rate of return, what is the effective rate of spending. And, in fact, the Permanent Fund has started reporting its effective rate of spending in their presentations to the finance committees. If there are periods where, more than a number of years where the effective rate of spending is higher than your real rate of return, then you're risking eroding the inflation-adjusted value of the Permanent Fund, and we need to not do that. And I think, you know, we have enough expressions of concern from investment consultants that 5% may not be achievable over a 10-year period. We do need to be very aware of what's going on with our spending versus our real return. This year, we have phenomenal response in the markets. Our returns are quite high, and we hope that we keep a material percentage of that amount by June 30th. But, you know, from here on out, I think you're going to find that the Permanent Fund, the Department of Revenue, OMB, Legislative Finance will be bringing reports and metrics to the Finance Committee so they understand where we stand with respect to spending versus a real return.
Senator Schauer.
I'll make it quick, Mr. Chair, just because I know time is an issue. Mike, I just want to throw out there, again, more not so much I think you really need to comment. I just want to get it out because, again, we saw a similar version of this bill a couple of years ago. We've been, you and I and others on the committee here have gone through it. And one of the things that came out, we worked really hard on the spending cap, you know, how we would handle this with what we would see back, not just the constitutional change, the spending cap we had, but, you know, in conjunction with a change to the permanent fund, the structure. And one of the problems you highlighted is that if we have too much of a return without a good spending cap, we tend to put ourselves into a position where we spend more. Then when it contracts, we're in trouble, which is where we are now, because the other side of the coin, right, is we then have too little money coming in and we're spending from our savings account that we've effectively depleted. So the volatility has always been one of the counters to Senator Meyer's question with this, giving us stability in the budgeting, and that's certainly an important thing for planning purposes, both for the permanent fund itself and how it does its investing, you know, and having liquid assets, but also, you know, trying to provide stability to the budget. I would just want to throw that out there that we have exhaustively went through this, and it is a concern, obviously, on both sides, except pros and cons to everything, but that is an issue. Without a good spending cap and things go up, we spend money and put ourselves into a square corner when things go down, because that's the inevitable turn. So I just wanted everybody to consider, again, for the public record, that we have exhaustively gone through this, and that is, again, Mr. Chairman, just a comment for the record, not that Mike needs to comment on. I just thought I'd put it out there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Schauer, it's an excellent point. And I think a 10% real rate of return is unlikely to be sustained over a long, you know, even a 5-year time period. If it is that, the spending trap is the danger there. Mr. Chair, why don't I just step back quickly to slide 3 and just go through the mechanics. I think we probably covered them, but just to make it real clear, first bullet point, this measure will transition the permanent fund to a single protected account with a distribution percentage specified in statute by the legislature. The formula will be in the Constitution, and that formula is a percentage times the 5-year lagging market average of the Alaska Permanent Fund. And then, as I indicated before, it establishes the permanent fund dividend in the Constitution with the legislature to set the allocation percentage in statute. And the governor, as Mr. Brzezinski said, is proposing a 50% allocation to permanent fund dividends. And then finally, there's a provision that whenever the legislature changes that allocation percentage to PFDs, that there would be an advisory vote of the people.
Thank you. Are there any more slides on SJR 6 that you want to visit? I don't see any questions from the committee at this point. So,
I have questions on SJR 6, but I don't know, you know, you're managing the time, so.
You have a question for SJR 6?
I do.
Senator Hughes.
Well, they are rather intertwined, so I don't know. So, we know the State versus Wilikowski case basically said the appropriation powers of the legislature superseded the statutory formula. I've also heard certain legislators in this building make the remarks that the appropriation bill, the operating budget bill that we pass each year is law, right? So you're passing a law. So let's just say both of these passed and we had a certain formula in statute. The legislature, based on the Wilikowski case, could, in another law, being the operating budget bill for that year, put a different amount. So would SJR 6, I guess my question would be, would SJR 6 prevent that from happening? Because they're both laws, because when I look on SJR 6 on page 2, line 7, it says a law that changes the amount allocated for dividend payments must be approved by the voters. So you could have a law with a formula. You could have a law that is an operating budget. So let's say the legislature doesn't follow the statutory, let's say there were a new formula, and they would do it through an operating budget, which is the law for that year. Now, how is that going to work? Because now we have to get that approved by the voters.
Yeah. Thank you, through the chair, Senator Hughes. You'll be perhaps happy to know that our clever drafters at the Department of Law had a similar concern. And so if you drop down to page 3 of SJR 6, lines 5 to 11, that basically says that for purposes of by law, it doesn't include appropriations. And Mr. Milks is here to explain that in further detail, but by law under this measure means by statute.
Okay, thank you, and I have another question.
Senator Hughes, probably the last follow-up on SJR 6.
Okay.
We will be moving on.
I tell you.
I anticipate we'll be spending much time on this. We'll probably slot another meeting to just try to get through SJR 6 and SB 53. We won't be doing sectional analysis today. We'll probably go till about quarter till, and then we have one more bill we're going to hear today. Okay?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a former Coast Guard, you do run a tight ship indeed. So I am concerned that SJR 6 actually, it may be less, give Alaskans less assurance that there would be a dividend paid because the May language as far as the draw. Let's just say we have a wonderful windfall of current revenue coming in. You know, we expand our economy, we've got new industries, and we can act, and let's say we have a spending cap too, and we're able to pay for our budget without a draw. So if we don't do, if the legislature wouldn't draw, there would be no PFD. So can you comment on that?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I actually can, and it's because in the other body in yesterday's hearing, this question was also posed, and Mr. Brzezinski testified that it's the intention of the administration that there be a dividend each and every year, and in the happy occurrence where we don't have to make any draw from the permanent fund, that nevertheless there would be a permanent fund dividend in such years, and he offered to work on amending language that would make that clear.
Okay, thank you.
Well, having acknowledged that we'll be covering this in another meeting, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I could use most of another meeting. I certainly have concern about that, because the way this is written right now, to go for a single year, in Senator Hughes' happy hypothetical, to 100% dividend, 0% public services, would take a vote of the people, the way this is written now. And I don't – that's what it says. I guess ultimately I do have a question of philosophy, which comes down to when this amendment submits things to the voters and when it doesn't. And it looks, not to put too fine a point on it, like a protect the check constitutional amendment rather than a protect the permanent fund amendment. And I said it more bluntly than I might otherwise to see if I could prompt the philosophical response. What, if we're talking about constitutional writing, what is the vision of government and the role of government with a protect the check constitutional amendment?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I'm happy to discuss philosophy at length, and people probably have to shut me up if I go too long. But I think I can answer fairly succinctly here. It's the intention of the administration to absolutely protect the inflation-adjusted value of the permanent fund going forward. So no overspending, period. But the way it does that is, and I think this is truly consistent with modern institutional fund practice, endowment fund practice, where you are trying to balance the access to the fund for the present versus access to the fund in the future. And the single best way of doing that is making sure that you spend only the real return of the fund over time and nothing more. You need to look at these in sort of 5 to 10 year averages because market returns can be quite volatile. But you know, the whole philosophy, if you will, governing endowments is to protect intergenerational equity. And as long as the real value of the fund, or the inflation-adjusted value of the fund, is the same over time, we say that we've maintained purchasing power. That means the people today have access to the same purchasing power as the people 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now. The way that the governor has proposed doing that is essentially to put the legislature in the shoes of a set of trustees, such as in a university endowment fund. And the legislature makes the call as to the rate of distribution. And it's our view that the legislature should consider a rate of distribution at any point in time that protects the real rate of the real value of the fund. And so, you know, if the words haven't quite gotten there to encompass that vision and that philosophy, we can certainly work on that. But that is somewhat at odds with a rate that's hardwired into the Constitution. SGR1 puts in 5%. 5%, as I said earlier, could be too high during certain economic time periods and investment market climates. And so by keeping it flexible, I think we're trying to do the best we can to ensure that we will, in fact, be protecting the permanent fund over any period of time, 50 years from now, 100 years from now.
All right. Thank you for that answer. Are there any other questions or comments from the committee? Senator Myers.
You did ask. I wasn't sure if we were going to continue with the
I'll just state I'll just state that we there was some urgency to try to get through 53 and 6, but I think we've just abandoned that thought. But we will be curtailing this line of discussion at about quarter till the hour.
Understood.
Okay, Senator Myers.
Thank you. Mr. Barnhill, I recognize that the point is to move these two pieces of legislation concurrently, and they do work together. But the fact of the matter is we have two pieces of legislation here, one of which takes 11 votes to pass, and the other one takes 14 in this body. Numbers are different on the other side. Here's my question. What happens if SB 53 passes and SJR 6 does not?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, and that's also a great question. And why don't we just flip to slide 5 and talk about SB 53. So SB 53 does two basic things. First, it implements SJR 6, but it also acts as a standalone bill in the event that SJR 6 doesn't pass. So as far as implementing SJR 6, SB 53 proposes a 5% distribution rate, a 50-50 allocation to PFD, and schedules an advisory vote on the PFD. If SJR 6 doesn't pass, but SB 53 does, then it makes a number of conforming changes to align the statute with the Wilkowski decision that Senator Hughes mentioned a few moments ago. And then we would just basically continue on under that paradigm.
That suits you, Senator Myers?
Not particularly. I think we've got a lot more problems if 53 passes than if without SJR 6 than if we leave it alone. But in the interest of time, and just wanting people to mull it over and knowing we're coming back to this at a later date, I'll go ahead and leave it be for now.
Thank you. I did want to mention, welcome Senator Reinbold. She joined the room some time ago. Didn't catch you when you walked in. But Assistant Deputy, I forget the exact title, pardon me, Deputy Commissioner Barnhill, did you want to move on to SB 53 at this time?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Slide 5 is our slide on SB 53, and I've basically gone over that.
I saw another slide, another 10 pages of slides in here. I thought we were going to cover those as well, too. Apparently not. Maybe I'd cross it over with something else.
Yeah, I think we're pretty much to the end of our presentation. If I could just get back to Senator Schauer's question about comparison between SJR 1 and SJR 6. And the basic difference is SJR 1, as I indicated earlier, has a hardwired 5% distribution rate. And then it essentially takes the legacy permanent fund dividend calculation formula and puts that into the Constitution. One thing I would note, the legacy permanent fund dividend formula served the state well. There is a lack of alignment between that approach to distributing permanent fund dividend and the institutional or endowment fund approach. A more standard method of distributing from a one account fund is just a percentage of the market value, and that percentage can be calculated in a variety of ways. We're proposing a 5% distribution rate of the 5-year market value average of the permanent fund, and then splitting that 50-50 between PFDs. The legacy formula, as Mr. Brzezinski noted, is also a 50%. If you look at the formula, you're basically taking a concept called statutory net income. You're taking it as what amounts to more or less a 5-year average of statutory net income, and then you're taking 50% of that. So both formulas are a 50% of a 5-year average of something. And in fact, we have looked at, over long periods of time, there are periods in which the legacy approach to the PFD will be higher, and the periods where it will be lower than a 50% of a 5-year market value average. The one thing that it might help the committee to know is the concept of statutory net income is definitely an approach to distributing from a fund that is historical. Statutory net income is basically looking at cash and realization, and that's what moves into your income account. We call it earnings reserve account. Cash moves into an income account when you get coupons, when you get dividends, and when you recognize gains. And so a lot of what moves into the earnings reserve is the product of investment management decisions, such as when we rebalance the fund or we change managers. There can be time periods where we're generating a lot of statutory net income because of those investment management decisions, and there can be times when we're not generating much at all because we're just sort of riding on the managers and the mandates that we have when there's not a lot of rebalancing that happens. My point is that statutory net income can be somewhat volatile over long time periods of time. The percentage distribution approach that the majority, if not all, institutional funds use in the world is more consistent, less volatile over time. And my concern about SJR6 is it's taking an approach to distribution that is non-standard at this point, potentially volatile. There are times when it could potentially be in excess of the 5% distribution rate, and I think those are concerns that the committee should consider. And we're happy to provide more discussion and information on that if you'd like.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. A brief at ease. All right, back on the record, Senate Judiciary Committee. Deputy Commissioner Barnhill, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for answering all those questions. We're going to call up Mr. Milks at this time for a few questions, and just because while we have him available. And Mr. Milks, do you want to make any kind of a short comment, or do you just want to jump straight into questions?
Thank you, Chair. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine.
Right. I think Mr. Barnhill has largely described the overall background of the bill, the constitutional amendment and the bill and how they travel.
Would you please state your name and affiliation, place yourself on the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
I should remember that. Bill Milks, Assistant Attorney General, Department of Law.
Thanks so much.
The only quick background, I guess, information I provide, I think Mr. Barnhill sort of described, and Mr. Brzezinski, that how these parts move together, constitutional amendment, and that the SB 53 is the effort to set out what the percentage of market value and the split of the money, and all of this follows. There's been discussion at the committee table today, as it usually is on permanent funded fees, that there was an important Alaska Supreme Court case named after Senator in the body, Mr. Wilikowski. That was an important case. Set out the rule that the statute setting out how a PFD would be paid are essentially advisory, that the law that governs is what is appropriated by the legislature.
Well, I know we do have a question from Senator Hughes. Senator Hughes?
Yes, and welcome today, Bill, and you were fading in and out a little bit, so you might want to lean closer to the mic when you speak. One is regarding Article 12, Section 7 of the Constitution, referring to what voters can do, and it does refer to initiatives and referendums, but it has to do with voters can't really deal with appropriations. So I'm just wondering if there's any conflict that's caused by putting a vote to the people as far as approving or disapproving an amount, if that's in conflict with Article 12, Section 7 or not.
Through the chair, thank you, Senator Hughes. It's a good question. And I think what that's referring to is SJR 6 proposes that there will be a current percentage of market value number for a draw from permanent fund, and then in subsection 2C, it provides that an amount of that, a portion that will be or shall be allocated for dividends, but then includes the provision which, if there's a future change in law, that must be approved by the voters. So this constitutional amendment, if it was passed, would govern. It would govern over the more general restrictions on initiatives in Article 11 that you've identified.
I'll have a question from Senator Hughes.
Thank you. I just want to make sure there wasn't a conflict here. And this is another question. It regards SB 53 and what could go on a ballot or not for an advisory vote. So one of my concerns about that, it doesn't actually ask the voter whether the proposal should be something the legislature should consider adopting as a resolution for a constitutional amendment. So if you were to add that question to the advisory vote, could it be all in one question, or would it need to be two separate questions? Because my concern, if you just ask the people, hey, do you think we should change the law? I think a lot of Alaskans have become aware in the last few years that the law has not been followed as far as the statutory formula. So they're going to hesitate wanting to change it because they don't think it's going to mean much of anything. So it seems like if you're going to do an advisory vote, you'd have to talk about the constitutional amendment in that. Is there any problem in having that be all in one question? Should this 50-50, is this 50-50 okay with you? And should the legislature consider a constitutional amendment resolution to establish this in the Constitution? Can you have that all in one question?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes. Well, you know, an advisory vote, the legislature has a pretty broad ability to draft an advisory vote. I think maybe how you described it, I mean, what the legislature is trying to do is to understand what the people think. So I think what needs to be careful on an advisory vote is that we're careful on what we ask, right? So if we asked a sort of compound question, then there might be some ambiguity there. Some folks might think, I like that split, but maybe I don't want it in the Constitution, or, you know. So I think it's really more of drafting. The legislature's pretty free to draft on advisory votes, but to get the benefit of the election results on that, you know, you sort of want to be careful on how you're drafting it so public understands the question.
And just thank you for that. So I wanted to know legally if there was a problem. I understand you have to think about what you're asking. Thank you.
Senator
legally,
Meyer.
There's no problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So along the lines of the advisory vote, as written, I got a funny feeling it would come out of no right now. Because boiling things down to a simple yes or no, this one doesn't really boil down to that, because the SJR suggests that we ask a yes-no question every time we change it about whether or not we should change it. This one changes it and then asks yes or no. So some people will vote yes because they're happy with the change. Some people will vote no because they think it should be changed towards more money for government. Some people will vote no because they think that the original formula should have been followed, and they weren't asked that question first. It seems to me we're kind of putting the cart before the horse on this one.
Through the chair, Senator, I think, you know, why to have this advisory vote in here, Mike, and why it's drafted in that way, I think that could be something for Mr. Barnhill, you know, but it is set up, the bill, SB 53, that it's a bill it would establish another framework for how to spend permanent fund income. Additionally, there'd be an advisory vote asking the voters, do you approve? Do you think that was a good idea? Do you think this 50-50 split is a sound idea? So I appreciate your point about which should go first, which should go second, but that's what this bill does provide, though, for it would go second. Maybe Mr. Barnhill could give you a few thoughts about it.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Myers, just a brief addition. So the government and maybe the administration is trying to put forward a proposal that comprehensively addresses some thorny problems that have defied resolution. And he's doing it with sort of three principles in mind. First principle, protect the permanent fund forever. Second principle, involve the people in a meaningful way. And third principle, protect the permanent fund dividend forever. And I think the hope here is that while if you ask 60 people, for their opinion on these issues, there's going to be disagreement in the details. But hopefully, the bottom line principle, there's going to be broad scale agreement. I think you make a fair point, which should come first. And in my experience working for government for a while now, is we're constantly faced with these chicken and egg issues, and they're real. And so I just want to say to you, this is a real issue. But what we're trying to do is put on the table for the legislature to consider a comprehensive set of measures that will solve these problems in a way that hopefully we can find a supermajority of people in the legislature that will agree, yeah, we want to protect the permanent fund forever. Yeah, we want to protect the PFD forever. Yeah, we want to involve the people in decisions as to how much PFD should be paid out.
Just a quick follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's the second principle that you mentioned there, Mr. Barnhill, that concerns me, talking about involving the people meaningfully. And the meaning is the portion here which I think things will get lost in the question that is in SB 53, because yes and no normally have pretty clear meanings. But the way that the question is asked by changing it and then asking if that was okay, the meaning gets muddled. And some people could say if this vote fails, the legislature could take multiple meanings away from it. Some people could take the meaning away from it that, oh, well, the people meant that we need to go back to the original formula, or some would take it to say the people are saying that it's okay for us to take more. And so I think that involving the people meaningfully, I think it sort of fails that test.
I don't believe there's a question there. That's asked and answered, Counselor. And I think we'll move on to Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is along a comparable line, but from a different direction. I'll see if I can resolve with a question mark. There is an order of operations issue for the amendment and the bill as they would move together, the way I see it. The constitutional amendment would say that any change to the split between services and checks has to be approved by the voters. But it specifically sets out in its transitional measures that all of that's after we pass 53 and it's law, regardless of the outcome of the advisory vote. It strikes me a little bit like this legislature and governor having whatever we want for dinner and then locking up the chicken or the rest of the flock. Doesn't it strike the administration as significantly inconsistent to make the change and lock it in the Constitution and then require a vote of the people for further changes rather than require a vote of the people for this change too?
Is there any response out there?
I guess I'll start. And it's always best to have Mr. Milk go after me to clean up whatever milk I spill. Through the chair, Senator Keel, the people are consulted through presentation of the constitutional measure on the general election ballot. And then the legislature is given flexibility to set the distribution rate and the PFD percentage allocation rate. The people are consulted to give an advisory voice to whether they think whatever change the legislature made, they agree with. There are always going to be different ways to do things. But this one seems relatively efficient in that it, but more than efficient in that it gives appropriate accord to a legislative process. The people elect our legislature. The legislature uses its expertise as well as, contribution from the executive branch to make a decision on behalf of the people. And then the people get to weigh in afterwards with respect to whether they agree with that. Again, it's an advisory vote. And to Senator Meyer's point, you can draw any number of conclusions from an advisory vote. But, in the past, when advisory votes have been put before the people, such as the one in 1999 involving use of permanent fund earnings for government, I think the legislature considered very strongly the weight of that advisory vote. And so therein, I think, lies the meaningful nature of this in that the people are being consulted.
I think that's fine. I hear a pause there. If what we'll probably move is, I think Senator Showers now had a chance to comment at this point, and I believe he had a comment.
I did. Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I won't, no questions here for Mike or Bill. Just, again, context, Mr. Chair, from the previous discussions, having gone through it, it's kind of irrelevant how we got here, and I think that's kind of important to note that, the bottom line is we're here. We talk about choices, about investment and royalties, taxes, what was considered part of the fund, et cetera. It's really irrelevant. We're here. Now we have to deal with it. And there's a lot of conversation, as Senator Keel mentioned and others, and some pretty intense debates about the services, the value of those services, the cash value, if you will, of those services versus your dividend check, et cetera. And I wanted to highlight one of the contextual things we came up with before that was debated pretty hotly was that that's not equally distributed. And I think that's important to note. And again, this is just comments, Mr. Chair, for context from previous committee debates over this. Not, some people are consumers, some people are producers in the economy. And when you talk about those cash values, some people use a lot more government services than others. Some people use almost none. So the dividend is distributed equally. And there is a difference in how we talk about that. And I think it's sometimes also lost in the shuffle that you can say government services, but again, they're not equal. That was one thing. And then I think at all of this, where we ended up basically is there's a lot of ways we could solve this. There's a lot of different things. We're all guessing. Nobody has any idea what's going to work because we can't predict the future. It may work. It may not work. We may have to change it. What this really boils down to for all of us is a philosophical choice and where we sit and how we want to handle this ultimately moving forward. And that's really ultimately, Mr. Chair, what we're debating. So maybe that's a good way to end up. Thank you.
Appreciate. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Barnhill and Mr. Milks. We're going to set this bill aside at this time. And I'm sure we'll be in communications trying to arrange some time probably next week to revisit a lot of these points. And at this time, I'd like to turn my attention to Senate Bill 122. And we'll do a brief at ease while we swap people out.